welcome to Let's Finally Watch This, a podcast for casual movie fans who have always meant to watch classic movies. I'm your host, Nick Hayden.
And I'm your other host, Timothy Deal.
And we are in 1974. The 70s are always interesting, Tim.
Oh, yes. This is a very tumultuous period, and I think it shows up in this movie, in this episode's movie, particularly well.
Yeah, so what is this episode's movie?
Chinatown.
Chinatown, which I'd heard of, again, but I'd never seen.
I think this is a very quintessential new Hollywood movie. I would say maybe the most new Hollywood movie we've had on Let's Finally Watch This.
In the 70s so far, we've had Poseidon Adventure, which
disaster movie, yeah.
Yeah. And then The Sting, which in some ways was more blockbustery than you think of new Hollywood in some ways.
Yeah, in some ways. But this is a very different beast.
Beast, yes. All right, give us a quick recap of kind of 70s new Hollywood stuff.
This is a period we've been saying that kind of started in the mid-60s and runs through the 70s, maybe into a little bit of the 80s.
Because Fistful of Dollars had a little bit of that, like, it just kind of non-traditional storytelling, a little darker themes.
It fed into that. I don't know if there was completely a movement yet by 1964, but certainly the overtones are there. And new Hollywood movies were very much inspired by what was going on in European cinema.
Okay.
But, you know, 60s, 70s, this is a very tumultuous period, and that gets reflected in the movies in some ways. Since studios were getting desperate to attract younger audiences who were into art house movies and European and Asian films, studios gave more control to younger directors who had innovative visions that differed from traditional Hollywood narratives. We've said all this before. I'm reading directly from an old
Cliff Notes here.
Yep. And that opened the door for unusual forms of storytelling, looser morals. We've already been talking about how that's been loosening with the demise of the Hays Code. And now 1968 again is when the MPAA rating system started. And new Hollywood era movies are noted for having more irresolution at the end. Again, reflecting European tastes in some ways, prompting more uncertain spectator responses.
What do you think this movie does?
Yes, I think you'll see features of new Hollywood all throughout this particular movie. Also worth of note in this year, specifically 1974, this is when Watergate is really at the height of it.
Okay, so we have all this corruption kind of in the upper levels, and do we trust the government and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. I think if I remember right, I looked this up earlier, but like I think the big arrests were made early, like in the spring of 1974.
Okay.
And like right around this time is when they're dealing with Nixon's tapes and he's on the verge of having to resign and all that. All that mess is really coming out right around this time. Chinatown comes out summer of 1974.
Okay.
So if
it's the season.
It really does. It really does. So that's what we really need to recap there. In terms of the movies that were coming out in 1974, top grossing movie of the year was The Towering Inferno.
Okay, another disaster movie.
Another disaster. In fact, there were three disaster movies that were in the top 10 grossing films of the year.
Everyone just loves disaster at this point. Like, the world's falling apart, let's enjoy it.
Yeah. And interestingly, the number two and number three movies, top grossing movies of the year, were both Mel Brooks spoofs.
Interesting.
Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein.
Nice. They both came out this year, huh?
Yeah.
Man, he had a year.
He had a big year for two different distributors, interestingly enough. But I don't know. When I saw that, I was like, that's really interesting, you know, this year where everyone's like kind of questioning the norms, like we're kind of spoofing our old movie genres.
Yep.
I don't know. It says something, I think.
A lot of deconstruction going on.
A lot of deconstruction going on.
Good and bad. I mean, there's not always a dirty word. In spoofing ways, it can be interesting.
True. I think there's some fun stuff in Mel Brooks comedies, but it does go along with the deconstructionist spirit that's going on at this point. At the Academy Awards, the best film went to The Godfather Part II, as did best director Francis Ford Coppola, Godfather Part II. Francis Ford Coppola, it's interesting that's in this year he has his own big movie coming that's out now. But
yes, I've not heard a ton about it. It kind of makes reviews. He spent a lot of money on it.
Yes, Francis Ford Coppola, I think, is in some ways a victim of his own success, but that's for a whole different episode. Best actor at the Oscars this year went to Art Carney, of all people, the guy from The Honeymooners, yeah, for a movie called Harry and Tonto, which I have never heard
no
of.
No one knows anymore.
Yeah. Best actress Oscar went to Ellen Burstyn for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which I also don't know.
Nope, I don't know. So sounds, maybe I've heard of it once.
Yeah.
So, Tim, what other movies had we nominated for this episode?
Well, not surprisingly, one of them was The Godfather Part 2. I say not surprisingly, but like it's surprising only in the sense that one of us had not seen it. And that's actually me. I have not actually seen Godfather 2.
Yeah, I've seen all The Godfathers, so...
And you may ask, how in the world can that be, Tim? You went to film school. Well, I went to a Christian film school. So, which they had us watch some R-rated movies, but that was not one. I actually just watched The Godfather just out of my own curiosity. Mm-hmm. So I still need to watch part two at some point. The other nomination for this year, or for this episode, was The Towering Inferno.
But we had done...
Poseidon Adventure.
Two seasons ago. So yeah. We'd already done a 70s disaster.
Yep. And Chinatown, again, being such a lauded screenplay, was hard to pass up.
Let's finally watch this. You gotta watch it.
It makes sense. We haven't been touching on film debuts much lately, but I thought we'd go ahead and mention that this year, 1974, saw the film debuts of Chevy Chase, Jeff Goldblum, and Henry Winkler.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if this is before or after Happy Days.
Okay.
Also of note, a director made his theatrical debut this year. Any idea who that might
George
be?
George Lucas?
Close. No, he was he was earlier with THX 1.
Okay, I didn't know what being new 70 later was. American Graffiti.
So Graffiti was 73.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Okay, I thought it was a little later than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a nominee last year.
70s is that era that like I can't place anything. Like,
but
no,
but you're close with Lucas.
Spielberg?
It's Spielberg.
Okay, what's his first one? Is it Amblin?
No, it is the Sugarland Express.
Oh, okay, I've heard of it.
Amblin was a short film that was technically his first direct, but this is, again, a short film done for Universal.
Yeah.
And he had done a TV movie before this, like a thing in 71. He'd done a couple of TV movies, his most famous one being Duel.
Okay, I have heard
of
that.
But the Sugarland Express, which is actually a crime film, and it sounds like some kiddie thing.
It does.
It's not. It's a crime movie. That was his first theatrical feature
came
out this year. 1 year before another film, which would redefine movies.
It is Jaws.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Spielberg is right on the cusp of rewriting
New Hollywood.
New Hollywood, basically, yes. So, yeah, that is...
Now, Academy Awards, didn't this movie win something?
It was nominated for 11 Academy Awards.
Yes.
It only won one.
Which was screenplay?
Which was best original screenplay.
Yes. Which we'll talk about that later, too.
Yeah, The Godfather wound up beating it in a lot of its categories. I will say Chinatown did, though, win several Golden Globes for best film, best director, best actor, and... in Jack Nicholson. So it cleaned up at the Golden Globes, but not the Academy Awards. I think that's about all I got for 1974 itself.
Any other questions? Who is this directed by?
This is directed by Roman Polanski. And I have to give you credit here, Nick. I had noticed that it was directed by Roman Polanski when we were putting this season together, but I did not put the pieces together on who that was. But as soon as you saw that credit, you're like, oh, that guy. And I was like, oh, yeah, he does have a reputation.
Can't
he
even come back to the United States yet?
No, he is. There is still a warrant out for his arrest in the United States.
Okay.
For basically having inappropriate relations with a minor.
Yes.
Which I don't think he's ever really, he pled guilty for, but I don't think he thinks he really did anything wrong.
Yeah.
But I will say Roman Polanski has had a very turbulent life. He was born Jewish, born in France, lived in Poland during the Holocaust. His mother died in that whole process, and Roman Polanski, as a 10-year-old, was on the run for a while.
That'll shape you.
That'll give you a perspective on life. Yeah. And then in 1969, his pregnant wife was murdered by the Charles Manson cult.
Wow.
Along with some other people in the same house. But I mean, yeah, like I think she was 8 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
So again, that's like just a few years before this movie.
Yeah.
Chinatown was written by...
Peter Town, is that correct?
Robert Town.
Robert Town.
And it was written with Jack Nicholson in mind. But the producer suggested bringing Roman Polanski in to do it. And he was reluctant at first to come back to the United States, because he, after his wife had been murdered, I think he went moved back to France for a while.
Yeah, I can get that. Yeah,
understandably. Yeah. But this convinced him to come back and wound up being the only movie that he'd come back to Hollywood for, because he would be arrested for that other matter just a few years later. So, yes, this is a director with a very checkered history, and that may influence some aspects of this movie.
Yeah, but we don't, I don't know enough about him. I just knew that little bit.
Yeah, I only mention it, I know it's dangerous to try to play armchair psychologist and why, what colors is someone's worldview and why a director would make certain choices.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the way this movie ends and is narrated.
We'll have to get to the ending here in a second.
Yeah, we'll put a big spoiler warning when we actually get to that part. But
One last thing I think we should mention, this is a film, neo-noir.
Neo-noir. Because
we had Double Indemnity as our film noir for the season.
That's right. And so basically what makes it a neo-noir is, in my opinion, it's after the noir style was popular and when people started recognizing that old style as film noir.
They're like, oh, that style, we'll do that.
Yeah, exactly.
They're more self-conscious.
Well, and if you think last season when we did a 70s movie, we did The Sting, which took place in 1930s, which this is also around the same time.
Approximately,
Mid-1930s. I'm guessing they must say either in the screenplay or there's a newspaper thing. I don't think it's said out loud what year it takes place.
No, there was a photo of a president.
There was a photo of Roosevelt on the wall, but he was in office for a long time. So,
that's true.
So, but according to Wikipedia, it takes place in 1937.
Okay, it must be in the script then.
But last season, we talked about The Sting, which takes place in 1936, if I remember right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So again, there's this nostalgic thing for the 30s and the 1970s, which if you think about it, it's sort of like, I hate to say this, but like when people nowadays make movies about the 1980s.
Yeah,
it's about the same sort of
thing. Like we grew up there and that's where all our memory, nostalgic memories are.
Yeah. But it is fascinating. So, and it really does, it's interesting. It's color, but it does feel like a noir, but we can get some more of that. Okay,
last thing before we get our synopsis, any lasting legacies or awards that we should mention?
Sure. This movie is lauded as a big critical success.
Yes, absolutely.
I remember reading in one of my textbooks, Story by Robert McKee.
Okay,
he lauds it a lot. I meant to go back and look at and see what exactly he said about it.
I mean, I'd heard about the script being great in several things I'd read about screenwriting. They kept like Chinatown.
Yep. So it's on several American Film Institute lists on their 100 movies. It's ranked 19.
Nice. Wow. That's 19th pretty high up.
Of all time. Yep. 100 Thrills, ranked 16. On their 100 Heroes and Villains lists, on the 50 villains, the character Noah Cross is ranked the 16th.
Okay, understandable.
Under villains, yep. For 100 movie quotes, ranked number 74 is this quote.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
On their list of 100 film scores, it's ranked number 9.
Oh, interesting.
And when they did their 10th anniversary of 100 movies, it moved from 19th place to 21st.
So which hardly at all.
Not a big move. And on their 10 top 10, when they ranked 10 mystery films, it is ranked number 2.
Wow.
Yep.
And it's on in our favorite film registry, I believe, as well.
I believe so. The National Film Registry entered it in 1991, so like the second year that they were registering films for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Also, The Guardian magazine and their 2010 list of films, they ranked it as the best of all time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Sight and Sounds 2012 poll, it was ranked number 78 among critics and 91st among directors. And on the BBC's 100 Greatest American Films list in 2015, it was ranked at number 12.
Wow.
So, again, very high legacy, very highly regarded among critics and directors alike.
We've watched a couple this season that are very highly regarded for a variety of reasons.
Yep. And I think I had postponed watching this. I knew it was one of those like great ofs, but it has this reputation for being very bleak.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. During the movie, I was like, oh, this is not as bad. And then it's like, oh, yeah.
The ending.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about the ending. But first, give us a synopsis.
Okay. So, again, this is a neo-noir taking place in 1937. Jack Nicholson stars as J.J. Jake Giddies. He is the kind of private eye that gets hired to investigate infidelity a lot of times. And he gets hired by one woman who calls herself Evelyn Mulray. the husband that he is investigating seems to be investigating, has a lot of dealings with the city's water supply. And for a little while, he just is doing very mundane things. But eventually, Jake does photograph him meeting with a woman. And for some reason, this gets published in the paper. I'm guessing that his client must have given these photos to the paper.
Yeah.
It wasn't clear to me. But then shortly after this, the actual Elvin Mulray, played by Faye Dunaway, shows up in his office and says, "Hey, I never hired you. I'm going to sue you for putting your nose in our affairs, for basically screwing up here." Jake realized, okay, so I was hired by the wrong person. And he now wants to know more of what's going on. And he definitely has a nose for wanting to uncover the truth, because he knows there's dealings going on with the city, and especially when the husband that he was investigating winds up dead. There's something going on here, and he wants to get to the truth. And he winds up actually collaborating with Mrs. Mulray. She drops her lawsuit, and they continue to investigate this matter together. And it uncovers a lot of corruption and incest and other unlovely things.
Yes.
So that's your summary. This is the sort of mystery that's basically the detective. It's not about deduction. It's about like just following one clue and which leads to the next, which leads to the next. Very procedural almost. But we can get more into the details in our actual discussions. It's hard sometimes to relegate ourselves to our actual timeline for these things, rather than just giving you the facts. But any other facts you need to know here?
No, I think we're ready to talk about this thing. It's a fascinating movie to talk about, I think.
Yeah, I think it will be too. We had a bit of a delay, so I've been looking forward to talking about this thing for a while. All right, our 12 minutes starts now.
Los Angeles, 1937. There are lots of guys like J.J. Gittes. They're easy to find, if you want to find them.
Mr. Gittes, have we ever met?
Well, no.
Never?
Never.
Since you agree with me that we've never met before, you must also agree with me that I've never hired you to do anything, certainly not spy on my husband.
You do your job, and sometimes you find the answers to questions that should never be asked. Or you find out what happens to people who ask them.
Hold it there, kitty cat.
All right. Let me just say straight up, the screenplay is fantastic. As far as the pacing and as a pure mystery, it just keeps unwinding. You just be like, wait, what? Wait, what? Wait. Yeah. I mean, it leads you along just about perfect. And we were even in the middle of the movie, we were just like, this is really working well. Mm-hmm. So you can see why, at least in the story, it's so compelling.
And I think there's a lot of details that you can get from repeat watching. I probably wouldn't, but just looking over reviews and commentary about it, and like, oh, okay, that's how these details connect.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of information, most of which is the audience will pick up as you go along, but there's more that kind of fleshes things out that are just kind of barely mentioned, kind of like Jake's past. He used to be a policeman.
Yeah.
A detective policeman, and he used to work in Chinatown.
China, yep.
You might wonder how does that name come into all this? At some point, apparently he says something along the lines of, "What did you do in Chinatown?" And he answers as little as possible.
And it's interesting because I remember that, but then reading somewhere it said that it's partly because there's so much going on in Chinatown that you're like, you don't know, is doing nothing's almost safer and more just than getting involved and not knowing who actually caused what.
Yeah, all the details, because of either...
It's so complicated and there's language barriers, and which is it's very much a movie where you can follow it, but there is a lot, the dialogue and the revelations are very, the dialogue's very minimal in some ways. And there's a lot telegraphed just through the process in some ways.
Yeah.
If this is how you go about your work, I'd say you'd be lucky to get through a whole day.
Actually, this hasn't happened to me for a long time.
When was the last time?
In Chinatown.
What were you doing there?
Working for the district attorney.
Doing what?
As little as possible.
The district attorney gives his men advice like that.
They do in Chinatown.
At the end, there's this big revelation, and at the end, we're looking back like, oh, okay, that explains, it would change your coloring of a lot of it to rewatch it.
Yeah. I would say the very last scene didn't necessarily feel inevitable to me, like some tragic endings. You want them to feel inevitable. This one doesn't really feel that way. But the whole, all the answers to the mystery all wrap tied together really well when you look back on it.
And again, it's fun to watch Nicholson so young. He does a great job.
Yeah, he is one I've seen very little of his work. I think the only two Nicholson movies I've seen before this were Batman.
Batman, yeah, that's how I first got to know him. Yeah,
yeah, and About Schmidt.
Okay.
Which is where he's an old man.
I see another one where he's an old man, but it's not that one. But
okay.
He's just a grumpy old man nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But yeah, this is where he's, you know, you can kind of see him as, I mean, he's not that handsome, but he's definitely a completely different quality than what I had seen of him before. He's very, like, kind of this smug, self-assured sort of sense. But it's a very interesting choice because he's, I mean, he tells a dirty joke at one point, and she's like, okay, whatever. But at the same time, he is very professional in all his interactions with women. And, like, he does feel like he's someone who is a former cop in some ways, the way he treats people. Mm-hmm. And he's a very interesting character.
I just may mention, also, the story is fascinating because it's a mystery, but it's also about this water drought problem in California. It's a very interesting historical setting, I guess, based on real stuff.
Yeah, from the original story, Los Angeles and how they dammed up the water to, like, kind of basically make the town possible in the middle of the desert. I guess that all happened 30 years prior to this in real life, in, like, the 1900s rather than the 1930s.
But it's an interesting setting. Like, it's an interesting combination of ideas that work, but are very unexpected, at least when I went into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting choice for a corruption story. You start off, or at least early off, in like the city hall meeting, basically, and it feels very formal. And it's like, it's not where I would expect a noir to be to deal with, but it makes sense.
So can we talk about the ending here?
Before we get to the ending, I want to talk a little bit about cinematography.
Okay.
I feel like the ending is going to have to be a spoiler.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Have a spoiler warning. But I do want to give credit to this because, again, noir, we talked before, like, it's black and white, it's like a lot of shadow and stuff, and it definitely has this, but this is a color movie at this point. Yeah. But it's definitely bathed in it's a very different look and very different feeling movie from The Sting, even though it's set in the same period. The Sting, I think, has a lot more vibrant colors in it. This one, everything is goldens and browns, and everything just feels kind of like you can almost smell some of the interiors that they're at. Not that they would, kind of a mustiness that you can almost imagine, like whether because of the cigarette smoke or from the veneer of the wood, or I don't know. Yeah. It's a very interesting looking movie.
There's a lot of smoking going on in this movie.
Yeah.
There is. Every scene, like, here, you want a cigarette?
Yeah, yes, please. Yeah. I mean, which is, again, very accurate to the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not necessarily a 1970s New Hollywood thing.
It was just interesting. You don't see that anymore.
No.
They'd rate R just for the smoking.
that's true. But I have heard some people say, again, Roman Polanski is European, thinks like a European filmmaker. That gives us a little different. And that's an aspect of New Hollywood. It's sort of like kind of a mixture between the Hollywood style and the European style, kind of a middle ground. And that I can see that in this.
I guess I should mention, thematically, it really is about corruption and dirty dealings. And this one guy who, I'm not sure he's really a hero, but he just wants to get to the truth.
Look, somebody's gone to a lot of trouble here, and lawsuit or no lawsuit, I intend to find out. I'm not supposed to be the one who's caught with his pants down. So unless it's a problem, I'd like to talk to your husband.
That should be a problem.
May I speak frankly, Mrs. Mulray?
If you can, Mr. Gittes.
Well, that little girlfriend, she was pretty in a cheap sort of a way, of course. She's disappeared. Maybe they disappeared together.
Suppose they did. How does that affect you?
It's nothing personal, Mrs. Mulray.
It's very personal. It couldn't be more personal. It's a business or an obsession with you.
He does care for the underdog, but it's not like this heroic way. Just like, it shouldn't happen this way. Like, this is not right. This is not half the movie ends up with his nose kind of cut up. Mm. Because the guy even makes a joke kind of like he's being nosy.
Yeah.
And like, so half the movie, Jack Nicholson has his giant bandage on the front of his face, which is interesting.
It kind of gutsy for a Hollywood star to like have half a movie with like half your face covered.
Yeah.
Or like a big portion.
But
of
he
face.
Really just, he's just nosy. He's like, what is true? And I think I can appreciate that. That's kind of like, let's put some light on the corruption here.
Yeah. Okay. Now I guess we need
spoiler alert.
Yeah. And it's sorry we try to avoid spoilers, a big answer, but the mystery, but like so much of your perception of this movie is going to be colored or tainted by the ending of this. Like I mentioned, alluded to before, it is a bleak ending.
Yes.
And it has a tragedy that I don't know is inevitable, but let's talk about that. And so we'll talk about that now. You want to skip ahead until you hear some sort of sound clip that's not us. That'll be your cue. All right. So what do you think?
Okay. First off, it's a dark content movie, but I was really enjoying the movie generally just because how it was put together.
Mm-hmm.
And then those last like 3 minutes where like they kill Faye Dunaway and Noah Cross, the bad guy, gets away with everything.
Yeah.
And you're just like, and what made me mad, not only was it depressing because it was, but it didn't seem like it was baked into the cake. It didn't seem like this had to be the ending. And what was interesting is when I did research, it wasn't the ending.
Yeah, it was not what the screenwriter originally
said.
And
I'm like, you can tell. At least I thought I could tell.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. Like, if it's a tragic ending because it's meant to be, good. But it just felt like, I don't know this is... Now, was it going to be a happy ending? No.
No, I think I read somewhere that one version of the original ending was that Faye Dunaway was going to kill Noah Cross. I'm using the actress name and the character name simultaneously. Like, she'd kill him, and so she'd go to jail for it, which is reflects what I've seen in some prior noirs. Like, a bad guy dies with a character, the girl, the femme fatale that you care about also winds up...
I can see, look, there's all this corruption. I can see, like, okay, it doesn't completely get solved. It's not that sort of blockbuster movie. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's all this corruption, he discovers it all, and then basically, like, he gets away with it, and you can't do anything about it. Too bad, Mr.
Forget Nicholson. It, Jake, it's Chinatown.
It's like, that just is such a weird ending to me for a movie where the whole thing's trying to uncover the truth, to have the truth not matter at all.
Yeah, I mean... Apparently, I mean, Roman Polanski made that choice and felt like it needed that so that it wouldn't just be a generic, the bad guy gets caught at the end. And it's hard to deny that makes the movie more memorable in some way.
That's true.
That's the whole reason you have that last ending line that's become a very famous line is because it's so hopeless.
So hopeless, yeah.
But it's one of those cases where like, yeah, it's more memorable, but is it actually better?
And I could even deal with maybe her, like, the woman getting away and Noah Cross getting away with some, like, having a bittersweet or, like, this is not fair, but we got something out of it. But basically, anything that good that could have got out of it got destroyed.
Yeah.
It's just, it's an ending, and it's a possible ending for this show, for this idea of corruption. It just happens, it's strange.
Yeah, it's an aspect about corruption stories, the way some people think about them, that I just don't jive with. I watched... On TCM, they had a conversation with Edward Norton about this because basically it was promoting some movie he was doing that he took a lot of inspiration from Chinatown. And the way he talks about it is if, like, this is the historical realities we have to deal with. Like, you know, people got away with doing stuff like this way back then. And so, you know, we just have to wrestle with that. And part of me is like, I see that from a historical perspective, but I don't know that it's a... I think the problem with, like, that kind of focus on your historical commentary of, like, yeah, this is our history. Yeah. We're like, our history is, we're rooted in this evilness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what leads into what critical theory stuff has. Basically, it robs you of any sense of pride in your own heritage. Yeah. And not to whitewash and say that bad things didn't happen, but I don't know that should be the focus of how we look at history.
And I think it would have been even okay. So there's two crimes going on. There's the social political one, and there's the personal crime.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about incest, and, you know, he's a horrible man.
Yeah.
I would have been even okay if he got away with the money and the political thing, but it really beats you up that he gets away with getting his granddaughter and daughter back, like he's a good grandfather thing.
Yeah.
And I think that bothers me more than anything else. Like, okay, fine, politics, he has money, he gets away with it. But I don't know, it seems like you could split the balance somehow and still have a realism movie without being like, who cares? You know, it's all useless.
It feels a little more nihilistic because of that. And, and it's one of the, like, Roman Polanski himself wrote the ending of this thing. And it's hard for me to say, this is why, like, I don't think you can completely overlook his history in this kind of stuff. I mean, one of his previous American movies before this was Rosemary's Baby, which is a movie about, that's a timer, but I'll ignore it for just a second. Rosemary's Baby, which is a movie about basically a woman getting impregnated by Satan.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a man that has a very dark view of the world, and you know, again, he went through some horrible things, but that doesn't necessarily excuse, well, his own crimes and what I think is a very hopeless, bleak ending for his story.
How much are you worth?
I have no idea. How much do you want?
No, I just want to know what you're worth. Over 10 million?
Oh, my, yes.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
The future, Mr. Gitz. The future. Now, where's the girl? I want the only daughter I've got left. As you found out, Evelyn was lost to me a long time ago.
Who do you blame for that, her?
I don't blame myself. See, Mr. Gitz, most people never have to face the fact that at the right time and the right place, they're capable of anything.
Well, that's the time. I'm sure we could have gone longer without more than 12 minutes, but
yeah,
there it is.
There it is.
So here's the complicated question, Tim. Do you recommend this?
Because like we said, for like 90% of this movie, yeah, it's pretty worth watching.
It's a dark material, but it's done really well, and it's not really explicit in any way.
Not for the most part. There's a couple of scenes. There's a very gratuitous sex scene that, like, I was like, what is that? I didn't really add that much to
it. No, that's true. That's true.
And, like, I mean, it only has partial nudity in it. But for the most part, if it wasn't for, that last 5 minutes, I would say, yeah, absolutely. But otherwise, I'd have to say,
stop it. That's fine.
Well, I guess you could say that, but
no.
I mean, this is one that I'd say is primarily for cinephiles. Like,
I could go with that. Like, if you really dig screenwriting, you want to see, it's because it's well known, you want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It just knows it's going to be bleak.
Yeah, and to be honest, I knew going in that it was going to be dark. I think the ending would have bothered me a lot more if I didn't know it was coming.
Which I didn't know it was coming. So,
well, I mean, I didn't know the details of it was coming, but I knew that. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown was the last line of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, they say that in the AFI specials about it. So I knew it had a bleak ending. I just didn't remember the details. Like, some of the details of it came back as I was watching it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that part.
So it's bleak, but it has some good art in it.
Yeah.
And so if you're the sort of person who can separate those two and you like finding, if you enjoy art.
Yeah.
And you know, artsy sorts of things, mm-hmm. I think it might be worth it.
There might be something. So, yeah. The nice thing about these reviews is that hopefully we give the audience a lot of information and they can go armed with that about whether this is going to be something that they should invest their time in or not.
Because this is R. I mean, it is.
Yeah,
it is. Content-wise.
Yeah.
Thematically.
Content and thematically, it is R. You know, aside from that one scene where Jack Nicholson gets his nose slit, there really isn't that much violence, actually.
No, there's really not.
And I guess there's a shootout here and there, but I mean,
I don't think there's language even hardly, a little bit, but not
again. He tells a dirty joke at some point, but yeah, it's a very mixed bag. This one, I mean, a lot of good filmmaking in here, but this is not going to be one that everyone should watch.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to rewatch it. Yeah,
yeah, I probably wouldn't.
So, okay, great. Good job, Tim.
Yay, we made it through.
Yeah. Next up is 1984.
That's right.
We're in blockbuster territory.
That's right.
And we are watching
another R-rated movie.
It always happened, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have, I'm not sure, did we have any R-rated movies last season?
I don't remember.
I don't remember right now. But anyway, this one is a little bit more mainstream. This is The Terminator.
Which I have never seen all of.
Yes.
Or maybe any of them. I'm not sure.
We'll see. I'll be curious, like, if after you watch it, it's like, oh, I do remember this.
Yeah, but I've not seen all of them.
Maybe me. And again, it's rated R, so you probably didn't see it as a kid.
No.
I have seen this one, but only once, so it'll be interesting to revisit.
All right. Don't forget to check out our website, derailtrainsofthought.com. Visit our various podcasts, our weekly hijack, our mothership, Derailed Trains of Thought.
Which is on hiatus right now, but in that podcast, we talked about all matter of things storytelling.
You have 150 episodes to listen to.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
Till next time.
Until next time. This has been Nick.
And this is Tim.
Adios.
Bye-bye.